In 1985, Mark Hoffman blew himself up with his own pipe bomb. Police immediately suspected him as the prime suspect in a rash of bombings in 1985. In this next conversation, we'll talk about how his lawyers tried to get Mark to take a polygraph test. He passed with flying colors. How did that happen? Shannon Flynn will tell us how. But before we get to that, I just wanted to mention our YouTube page. YouTube used to allow me to post our website on there, but now they require 10,000 views. We're about 60% of the way there, so I'd like you to please check out our Facebook page. Also, if we can get at least 100 subscribers, I can have my own customized YouTube channel link, and I'd really like to do that. Right now, it's really hard to remember address. So please like our YouTube page. Just do a quick search for Gospel Tangents, and you'll see all of our interviews there. Now back to our conversation. Now, one of the other interesting things that you told me about was that Mark was able to pass a polygraph test. Mm-hmm. How was he able to do that?
Okay. Well, this is the way he was able to do it. He was examined by some of the premier polygraphers in the United States, and it was one of the fellows was from that actually administered the test was from the University of Utah. And it turns out that when that test is given, there's a paper recording goes on, and so the important part for determining if a person's truthful or not is not sitting at the test, but it's reading the chart. And so then, and examiners will all the time have other people that were not present in the test read the chart, so they're kind of coming at it fresh. So they're not being biased by what they saw or anything. They're just looking at the chart. Well, in his particular instance, it was done by a very competent examiner, and then it was read by five other well-known examiners, and they all declared that he was truthful. But the way that particular polygraph works is, it doesn't say, it isn't like true or false. I mean, what you see on TV is a bunch of hooey. All it does is tests physical responses under stress to questions. And a good examiner will get the person really stressful so that they react strongly physically when they're telling an untruth. And when you hear about the sweating, that galvanic skin response, that's one of them. They will test for that. They'll test your breathing rate. They'll test your pulse. When I had mine, there were six different indicators going on. When Mark did his, it was just four because it was being done remotely. I mean, the way he was able to beat the polygraph, he had very competent examinations and reads, and they all showed him to be telling the truth. The way that those polygraphs work is they work on what is known as a zero null system. So in other words, they put up a scale, and zero is the center, and then it goes -1, -2, -3, -4, you know, all the way -15, whatever, and then +1, +2, +3, whatever. And so when a test is scored, they will give a number, but the number will be +1, -3, or +10. And generally, between -5 and +5 is a no reading. They can't tell. The person has been messing with the test, or the examination wasn't done well, or that they can't tell, so it'll be towards the center of that. But then when you get to -10, -11, -12, very untruthful and easily seen. +10, +12, +15, very truthful. Mark scored a +14. Wow. I scored a +12. That really bothered those examiners. When they find out that he had beat that test, it really bothered them. And so it turns out that the main person up at the University of Utah, David Raskin, was able to arrange an interview with Mark when he was in prison, about 2 years, year and a half or 2 years afterwards, because he wanted to find out how in the world he was able to do that. And this is what Mark told him, and he said, Mark presented as very happy, you know, happy as you can be in prison, but, you know, a normal person, and didn't present with, as I mentioned, with a lot of psychological problems, but he said that he did have a very unique ability, and that is when he was about 13, he went to see a show where there was a hypnotist. And I remember it in Salt Lake. Ravine, maybe, was his name. I don't know. Maybe some of the listeners will know who this is. But he would come and kind of do shows, Saturday, you know, matinee shows and stuff. And that sparked a real interest in him. And he pursued that for the rest of his life and still does, where he has learned techniques of biofeedback, relaxation, and...
hypnosis?
And self-hypnosis. And so he told David Raskin that basically what he did was, and evidently through the questions that David asked, well, how does this work and how does this work, he was convinced that he really does know how to hypnotize himself. He wasn't just saying that because he was able to describe the procedures correctly. He was able to describe how he's able to control, you know, his physical responses. And so David believed that he really can do this. And I guess he did some investigation, because at one point, and Mark told me this some years later, that he was actually able to go to the dentist in prison, have a root canal done with no anesthesia.
Wow.
Biofeedback, relaxation. And he told David Raskin that he had had dental procedures. And he says he was conscious of what was going on, but just had learned to block the pain. So he hypnotized himself the night before the polygraph and then again in the morning, and just told himself over and over again, I didn't do it, I didn't do it, I didn't do it. And then describes the test being administered. And when they got to the questions, did you cause the death of Kathleen Sheets? Did you cause the death of Steve Christensen? You know, and there's only a small number of questions. Again, on movies and TV, this long line of questions, that's not the way it works. He was able to not produce any significant physical response to that, and said that he was aware of the questions, but could just let his subconscious come forward that he had convinced hadn't done it.
That's amazing.
David now believes that his tests are still just as valid, but he believes they're now, and he says, because 95% of polygraphs are used for criminal matters, and he says there's almost no criminals who are going to go through that effort. But he says there is now a category that there is a potential problem in, and that is with spies, because they would have the sophistication and the knowledge base to learn self-hypnosis. And that could really become a problem, because in organizations like the CIA, FBI, they routinely use polygraphs to make sure everything's kosher in the system. Well, they would have to now be aware that there's possibility that some of those people that are working as an agent or whatever, or, you know, captured people that have come over from a different country, have learned those techniques, and those polygraphs may not be valid on them anymore.
Wow, that's amazing. So is that why they don't use polygraphs in court as evidence?
No, they don't, because those things are still too unreliable. And they're just unreliable in that they're still that center section, that if you are scored a +1 or a -2, it doesn't mean anything. It doesn't tell if you're truthful or not. And so it that comprises a large enough segment of the polygraphs that it just makes them, you know, non-usable. And there's a lot of people in the legal profession that still have real problems with, because when you're entering that as verifiable testimony, you've got to kind of be more sure than that. But like I say, I mean, those things are, and I think when David Raskin says that they're accurate, that doesn't mean that they can always tell truth or not, because there's going to be some in the middles. But what they're saying are, is where they do get the very high plus ratings or the very low minus ratings, those are 90 or 95% accurate all the time.
Okay, so do you know how many of these are in the middle range, you know, -5 to +5?
I don't know.
No.
Somebody, please go out and do the research for us. And when this appears on Wheat and Tares, write a comment and tell us.
All right. That's great. Okay. I hope you enjoyed our conversation with Shannon Flynn. In our next conversation, we'll talk about the bomb blast that injured Mark Hoffman. What did bystanders do to help him out?
And his shirt, Mark's shirt, was torn a bit, and he could see garments. So he said, oh, that guy's a, he knew the guy was a member. Pulled out a little vial of oil and gave him a blessing that he would live. Well, he did live. I'll let you all think about that one.
Click here to subscribe, click here for a transcript, and over here you'll see some other videos that we've done here on YouTube. We hope you'll use this as a valuable resource to learn more about Mormon history.